Today is Thursday, June 25th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. The head of the WHO says the world wasn't as prepared for the COVID-19 pandemic as it should have been.
We must all learn the lessons it's teaching us, that we are one humanity.
Plus, the search for justice after French police knelt across the throat of a black man.
Among the things they told me, there were things which were totally discriminatory.
And the EU reacts to possible new tariffs from Washington. We'll have those stories and more next. As the total number of global COVID-19 cases approaches 9.5 million, the World Health Organization Director General Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said it had received the funding it needed after donation pledges by Germany and France.
Our aim has been to transform WHO into the organization the world needs, an organization that delivers results for the people we serve. Every day, WHO works all around the world to promote health, keep the world safe, and serve the vulnerable. Every month, we detect and respond to more than 7,000 public health events and potential emergencies all over the world. The COVID-19 pandemic is a once-in-a-century event that has shown the world was not as prepared as it should have been. We must all learn the lessons it's teaching us, that we are one humanity and none of us are safe until all of us are safe.
The United States leads the world in both total number of infections, with more than 2.3 million cases, about one-fourth of all cases, and nearly 122,000 deaths as of early Thursday, according to Johns Hopkins University Coronavirus Resource Center. Latin America has emerged as the newest epicenter for COVID-19, with the regional death toll surpassing 100,000. More than half of the deaths, 54,000, have been in Brazil. Tedros says the number of coronavirus cases throughout the world could reach 10 million next week. A new report says the U.S. states and local governments need federal aid as they recover from the pandemic. And AP correspondent Mike Gracia has that story.
In what could prove to be a template for Congress as it works on a fifth and possibly final COVID-19 response bill, a private sector report says without relief for states and local governments, there could be 4 million lost jobs. Moody's Analytics says the $500 billion for state governments and $375 billion for local governments passed by House Democrats last month is likely beyond what's needed. Moody's calls for $500 billion in combined state and local aid. And the report says $120 billion might be enough to get states through the 2021 fiscal year that starts next week. Mike Gracia, Washington.
The World Health Organization has declared an end to the second deadliest Ebola outbreak in history. The virus killed 2,280 in East Congo during the nearly two-year crisis, which was the first time an Ebola outbreak erupted in a conflict zone. Even with the emergence of two vaccines, the Ebola response was repeatedly challenged because of armed groups operating in the area and community mistrust of health workers. Boubacar Drame had been helping a mother find her lost daughter in a working-class Paris suburb before three police officers approached. One spoke a few words. A second took the 31-year-old black man to the ground and knelt across his throat. Now Drame is on a quest for justice. Reuters' Lauren Anthony has that story.
The incident led to an ongoing police internal investigation, but Drama believes there's been little in the way of answers or accountability so far.
When I was on the floor, they crushed my head and then my throat and my chest and stomach. Then I felt a pressure between my legs. I thought he hadn't done it on purpose, but as I saw he was doing it insistently, I knew it was intentional, so I screamed. People were coming around us, so in desperation I asked them to film, as I thought that maybe that would put them off. At that time I felt totally powerless. They were crushing me. I couldn't do anything. I felt it hard to breathe properly. They were hurting my private parts. They inflicted all kinds of abuse.
Drama says he had no idea why he was being detained, other than he matched the profile of a suspect they were hunting. He was released after the town mayor and police chief intervened. He worked as a community mediator for the town at the time. Drama filed a complaint with prosecutors.
Among the things they told me, there were things which were totally discriminatory. They told me, I'm used to guys like you. What does that mean? What does he mean by guys like you?
It's now a year on from Drama's detention, and though the streets of Gennevilliers are far from Minneapolis, the pain felt across the world over the killing of George Floyd resonates. The ordeal has left him psychologically scarred. A doctor ordered him on sick leave for 3 months. Paris police said they could not comment on an ongoing investigation.
That was Reuters reporter Lauren Anthony. Imran Aitin has been playing a prominent role in protests that have been sweeping across London in recent weeks. Now, she tells the Associated Press that after the death of George Floyd while in police custody, she thinks the U.S. has a lot of work to do to gain the trust of black communities.
I'm not a historian, nor do I live in America, but what I do know is that they have their issues just like England. So we are very much united in that same front because they are very much aware of systematic racism in their country, and I'm, and many others are very much aware of institutionalized racism here. So we all have our issues. They have a very troubled history, so they have a lot of work to do.
Aitin is calling on the government to implement the recommendations of a series of reviews on ethnic injustices, including the Lamy Review of 2017. That looked into the treatment of ethnic minorities in the criminal justice system. The police officer who shot American Rayshard Brooks in the back as he was running away has been charged with 11 criminal complaints, including felony murder. But could the charges against the police officer who shot Brooks in the back be a rush to judgment, given the current political climate in the United States? International Edition's Lori London spoke with Jason Johnson, president of the Law Enforcement Legal Defense Fund, who was supporting the former officer.
This was a situation where Mr. Brooks, even though he had been completely cooperative for 40 minutes with the police and the police had treated him with professionalism and respect, when he was told he was under arrest, he started violently resisting and assaulting police officers, even disarming one of their taser. And then he fled, and with a police officer following close behind, he turns with the taser in his hand and points it at the officer and discharges the taser. You know, there are a number of different explanations for why a police officer in that position would objectively fear for their life. And that seems to be what happened here. But we don't know the full picture yet because the investigation that was underway was basically disregarded by the district attorney who made a decision to charge without the benefit of the investigation. And it lies in stark contrast to the George Floyd case, where there was an investigation. There was even a hesitancy on the part of the district attorney to bring criminal charges without a full investigation, even though in that scenario, the investigation was a little bit less important than in this Brooks case in Atlanta.
Police have come under a lot of scrutiny, obviously, lately. People in this case were basically saying this man was sleeping in his car after falling asleep drunk, and that he really wasn't posing a threat to anyone, and that because he was cooperative, that it didn't have to escalate to the degree that it did.
It's very common for observers of police behavior to draw some conclusion from the initial contact or the reason for the initial contact, and then look at the end result and say, well, driving drunk should never end with a person being shot and killed by the police. But it's really not important how the contact started. It did start from a call for service in which Mr. Brooks was alleged by the Wendy's manager to be passed out in the car. And then that led Officer Roth to the scene, caused him to undertake an investigation and determine that Mr. Brooks had been driving while intoxicated, which is against the law. It still subjects you to arrest. Officer Roth was doing what he's been trained to do, what he's developed an expertise at. He did so professionally with courtesy, didn't use any force whatsoever on Mr. Brooks until Mr. Brooks began violently resisting. And so it really doesn't matter how the contact started. The contact ended with Mr. Brooks presenting a real threat, an imminent threat to Officer Roth, and he responded accordingly.
Jason Johnson is the president of the Law Enforcement Legal Defense Fund, and he was speaking to International Edition's Lori London. The Trump administration said Tuesday it is considering further tariffs on products ranging from German beer to French sweaters. That prompted an angry response from the European Commission, which said it would further harm companies already reeling from COVID-19. Nicholas Pineau has more.
Brussels criticized U.S. threats to hit $3.1 billion of European products with additional tariffs as very damaging in the latest sign of growing transatlantic trade tensions. The Office of the U.S. Trade Representative on Tuesday issued a list of goods from across Europe that could be hit with additional duties. This includes a new draft list of 30 different types of products not previously under consideration, such as olives, pastry and cakes, beer, gin and vodka, all imported from either France, Spain, Germany or Britain. Other goods potentially at risk for inclusion are cashmere clothes produced by French luxury brands and hardware products. The United States has already placed 15 to 25% tariffs on $7.5 billion worth of goods, and this notice will raise the tariffs up to 100% on affected goods. The comment period on the additional tariffs is open until July 26. The Commission spokesperson said Brussels was concerned that the measures might even go beyond what is authorized under the WTO. For the EU, the priority remains finding a balanced, negotiated solution. This latest development complicates an already shaky transatlantic relation between Washington and Brussels after the WTO ruled in favor of the United States that the EU improperly provided subsidies to airplane manufacturer Airbus. Nicolas Pinault for VOA News, Paris.
The Trump administration says it has determined that top Chinese firms are owned or controlled by the military. Reuters reporter Ryan Brooks has that story.
The Trump administration has drawn up a list of companies from China that have ties to the country's military, which may lay the groundwork for fresh U.S. sanctions. They include tech giant Huawei, the video surveillance company Hikvision, as well as China Mobile and China Telecom, both of which are publicly listed in New York. The document was seen by Reuters on Wednesday, and a U.S. defense official speaking on condition of anonymity confirmed its authenticity and said the document had been sent to Congress. Huawei was placed on a trade blacklist last year over national security concerns, and Washington has led an international campaign to convince its allies to exclude Huawei when setting up their 5G networks. The Pentagon putting these companies on the list doesn't trigger penalties per se, but it's compiled as part of a 1999 law that says the president may impose sanctions, which could include blocking all the company's property. It will also likely add to tensions between the U.S. and China, the world's two largest economies. They've been butting heads over a litany of grievances recently, including the global health crisis and Beijing's move to impose security laws on Hong Kong. Most of the companies on the list and the Chinese embassy in Washington did not respond to requests for comment. However, Hikvision called the allegations, quote, baseless, saying it was not a Chinese military company and that it had never participated in any R&D work for military applications.
That was Reuters' Ryan Brooks. And coming up later,
I think obviously what Egypt is trying to do is to rally as much international support for its position, including most prominently and most obviously from the U.S. government.
This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Disturbances on the sun have the potential to wreak havoc with Earth's power grids and communication equipment. A new study by biologists at Duke University in North Carolina and an astronomer from the Adler Planetarium in Chicago suggests that solar storms could also mix up the navigational abilities of whales, causing them to be stranded or beached on land. Scientists have found that some animal species can detect Earth's magnetic field and use it as a kind of GPS to navigate their migrations. The study's authors say that solar storms could be disrupting signals from that magnetic field. They suspect radio frequency noise created when high-energy solar particles smack into the magnetic field could be overpowering the whale's senses. It would be like turning off their GPS during the middle of their journey. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. U.S. House of Representatives Democrats blasted Attorney General William Barr at a hearing on Wednesday over accusations he had improperly meddled in criminal cases and antitrust probes for political gain. However, they stopped short of pledging to take any steps to try and oust the nation's top law enforcement official. Reuters' Chris Dingham reports.
Donald Iyer served as Deputy Attorney General.
Here we go again. I appealed the ruling of the chair on a point of order. You cannot overlook that.
And Mr. Collins, you can't interrupt these proceedings, and the American people deserve to know the truth.
The House Judiciary Committee held a contentious hearing Wednesday.
Here before the
gentleman will suspend.
Over allegations U.S. Attorney General William Barr improperly meddled in investigations for political gain.
You cannot simply go over a point order, which has been repealed the ruling of the chair. And I'm speaking to you to gavel me down, but this is...
Rules don't matter in here, apparently.
The divided panel, led by Democratic Chairman Jerry Nadler, heard from witnesses who say the top law enforcement official in the country acted to benefit President Donald Trump.
I am here because I believe that William Barr poses the greatest threat in my lifetime to our rule of law and to public trust in it. That is because he does not believe in its core principle that no person is above the law.
As he delivered his opening statement, former Deputy Attorney General David Ayer was interrupted by several Republican members of the panel, including Representative Louie Gohmert of Texas, who complained that Ayer exceeded his allotted time and incessantly knocked on his desk to drown out his testimony.
Can I have one more sentence here?
By all means.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I would ask that the sergeant at arms be called upon to stop the disruption of this meeting. I can't hear this witness. This is a very important witness.
Yeah, well, he's way beyond
the chair.
And if there are no rules about when people can talk, there's no rules about when you can make noise.
Wednesday's tense hearing also featured testimony from current Justice Department employee Aaron Zelinsky, a federal prosecutor who testified that his office was pressured from the highest levels of the DOJ to scale back its sentencing recommendation for Trump's longtime friend, Roger Stone.
What I saw was that Roger Stone was being treated differently from every other defendant. He received breaks that are, in my experience, unheard of.
Republicans on the panel, including ranking member Jim Jordan, criticized Zelinsky, arguing he couldn't know if reducing the Stone sentencing was politically motivated because he never spoke directly to Barr.
So you didn't talk to any of the people who ultimately make these decisions, did you, Mr. Zelinsky?
I requested to speak with the U.S. attorney, but I
didn't ask you if you requested. I said, did you talk to him? You didn't talk to the attorney general, didn't talk to the DAG, didn't talk to the U.S. attorney.
Wednesday's hearing came at a time when Barr has come under growing scrutiny after he intervened in two prosecutions involving Trump allies, fired federal prosecutor Jeffrey Berman, whose office has investigated people close to Trump, and oversaw the use of force by federal law enforcement officers against peaceful protesters in Washington's Lafayette Square.
We have a real problem here.
And with less than 5 months before the election, Ayer said he feared Barr's alleged misbehavior would only get worse as November draws closer.
The drumbeat of his misbehavior is accelerating as we get closer to the election. I don't know what's next, but I'm scared to think about what it might be.
A Justice Department spokeswoman said on Wednesday that Barr himself will testify before the House Judiciary Committee on July 28th.
Chris Dingham reports for Reuters News. South Korea is commemorating the 70th anniversary of the Korean War's outbreak amid the coronavirus pandemic. The anniversary is not an official holiday, but the occasion is often marked with ceremonies, war photography exhibitions, and tours to former battlefield sites for visiting foreign veterans. This year, many public observances have been scaled down or canceled because of the coronavirus, which health officials say is now in its second wave in South Korea. The antidote to Sudan's fiscal misery could depend on an international donor teleconference taking place in Berlin Thursday. Sudan, which has struggled with chronic shortages and crises, including the coronavirus pandemic, is counting on international entities injecting funds into the country. More than 40 countries are expected to participate in the donor conference hosted by the European Union, Germany, and the United Nations, as well as Sudan. It is unclear the conference's outcome will sustain Prime Minister Abdellah Hamdok's transitional power-sharing deal with the military. Libya's Coast Guard intercepted 71 migrants hoping to make it to Europe, including four women and two children, and return them to the capital of Tripoli. The International Organization for Migration treated its staffers, gave the migrants who were stopped late Wednesday food and emergency assistance. The IOM earlier this month estimated the death toll among migrants who tried to cross the Mediterranean past the grim milestone of 20,000 deaths since 2014. In recent years, the European Union has partnered with Libyan forces to stop the flow of migrants. Rights groups say those efforts have left migrants at the mercy of brutal armed groups or confined in squalid and overcrowded detention centers that lack adequate food and water. The dispute over filling the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam has reached the United Nations Security Council. However, Ethiopia says it plans to start filling the hydroelectric dam on the Blue Nile next month. William Davidson is the International Crisis Group Senior Analyst for Ethiopia, and he spoke to VOA's Salim Solomon. Davidson begins by explaining the role the international community has played so far.
The latest situation is that the process is now focused around the United Nations Security Council. And that's because negotiations resumed on the 9th of June, but then they broke up again on the 17th of June without an agreement. And just a couple of days later, Egypt wrote its second letter to the Security Council, this time asking for an urgent meeting on the matter and calling the GERD and the situation around it as a potential threat to international peace and security. Ethiopia has replied, rejecting all of these allegations. But the point is, at the moment, we're not in the negotiations, and instead it's this sort of process of diplomatic escalation. And it was in the aftermath of the latest breakdown of negotiations that we had this intervention from the National Security Council in a tweet. I think it should be noted, we haven't seen too many other signs of a US government taking a position in the last few days. So at the moment, the tweet is somewhat isolated. But the claim and the position that the NSC seemed to be expressing there was something along the lines of the Egyptian position, that it was Ethiopian intransigence which has prevented the parties from coming to an agreement. Now, as you can imagine, there's a great deal of claim and counterclaim over that. But what we can say is that in the last round of negotiations, the issue that the process most prominently stumbled on was legal issues, and that was relating to whether the agreement that they were trying to sign is going to be legally binding or not. Now, there's a lot more detail behind that, but essentially Egypt and Sudan disagreed, opposed the Ethiopian position that it would not be a fully binding international treaty.
Why has it escalated to this level? And would taking it to the Security Council resolve the issue?
There's two ways of answering that. One would be to explain what Egypt's trying to do. The other would be to give my own crisis group's view on it. I think obviously what Egypt is trying to do is to rally as much international support for its position, including most prominently and most obviously from the US government. It seems to think that international pressure, whether from the UNSC or whether from related activity stemming from it being raised internationally, Egypt seems to think that that will either get Ethiopia to pause its filling plans or get Ethiopia to sign an agreement, which it otherwise was not willing to do. Now, as far as we are concerned at Crisis Group, there is no evidence for that. There is no suggestion that Ethiopia is not going to fill the Renaissance Dam, to start filling the Renaissance Dam next month. There is also no sign, no clear sign that Ethiopia is willing to submit to increased international pressure on this matter. And in fact, there are plenty of signs that Ethiopia is set up, is in the mood to resist any further international pressure on this matter, because of course we saw plenty of pressure from the US government earlier in the year. So Egypt is following a policy of diplomatic escalation to try and increase the pressure, but it isn't really clear to outside observers why they think that that is going to be a successful strategy given their stated aims here.
William Davidson is a senior analyst with the International Crisis Group. He was speaking to VOA's Salim Solomon. You've been listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day. You can do so by pointing your web browser to voanews.com on your phone, your tablet, or any other electronic device. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Be well, be safe, and good night.